A new exhibit opening later this month at Boston's Museum of Science features the work of 8 Woods Hole scientists as interpreted by 8 New England artists. The works include abstract video, sculpture, photography, and paintings, and each is as unique as the artist-scientist team that created it. Synergy, as the Art Science Collaborative is aptly named, is the brainchild of Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution graduate student Whitney Bernstein and artist Michael McMahon. Whitney and Michael joined me on Living Lab back in June to tell the story of how they met and how the idea for Synergy was born. And as fate would have it, one of the people who heard that conversation was Lizzie Kripke. Lizzie is a one-woman art science collaborative. She's working towards both a BS in neuroscience and a Bachelor's of Fine Arts in Painting in the Brown Rhode Island School of Design dual degree program. After hearing about Synergy, she got in touch with Whitney and Michael and signed on as a co-organizer. Lizzie and Whitney joined me this morning to look back on the process and the products of the Synergy project. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning.
Thank you, Heather.
As always, we welcome you to join our conversation. Call us at 866-999-4626, email us at livinglabradio@wgbh.org, or find us on Twitter. Now, there are 8 different works to get through, so we're going to try to fly through these and give everybody a little taste of just how diverse these different works of art are. Let's start with Joseph Ingoldsby. He created this kind of collage of scientific photographs. And in some ways, I think it's perhaps the most literal translation of the science in all 8 of the projects, that's talking about coral reef changes due to changes in ocean chemistry because of carbon dioxide. And he really just shows very literally how the coral reefs are changing with photographs.
Yes, Joseph was a really interesting artist in his collaboration because he really delved in to the investigative side of the science. He went to museums, he was reading primary literature. So I think that his use of scientific photos, which he has collaged into these narrative panels, really speaks to how true he wanted to stay to that science. And he was really concerned with communicating the story that is behind these scientific processes.
Mm-hmm. And some of the some of those stories really involve these transformations, as you said, of the coral reefs at this time, as more and more human impacts are affecting these reefs with climate change and ocean acidification and local impacts. The reefs, you know, many of these reefs are becoming degraded. And so he shows in a very visually compelling way how these reefs are changing from a very dynamic, colorful, you know, very busy and bustling kind of ecosystems to more gray ecosystems covered in algae and with less diversity. And so he really captures these transformations that are happening on the reefs and shares that with the viewer.
And it really seemed like he was trying to really almost motivate people to do something about it. This wasn't just kind of an impartial, here's what's going on. It really felt like he had an investment in mm-hmm. in making sure that people understood what was happening and that something needed to be done about it.
Yes, he does take that very seriously. He calls it his like call to action, and he really does want to motivate the viewer to really be touched by these transformations that are happening and take action to preserve these ecosystems.
Now, another one of the artists also was dealing with the process of ocean acidification, Karen Ristabin, and she took an incredibly creative approach to trying to just explore and display the process of ocean acidification and how it impacts, in particular, animals that have shells. And she actually decided to use eggs. We have a clip of her actually talking about that process.
Eggs are made of calcium carbonate, and that's the same thing as shellfish and pteropods are made from. It's the same chemical makeup. I just started experimenting with putting, you know, blown out eggshells in vinegar. The eggshells become acidified. They start to morph into very different forms, like little porcelain pieces.
I've always been like a math science person, so I've always stayed away from art, but I see now that, you know, you can use art and science together to create, you know, something that is more available to the public.
So what she created, and I should say that clip comes from an interview that Ari Daniel Shapiro did with Karen and her scientist collaborator. And we'll be playing some clips throughout the show from Ari's video slideshows or audio slideshows that he put together about these different collaborations. And you'll be able to find links to those later on our website. But I love in looking at those acidified eggs that Karen created. I mean, the idea of dipping a blown out eggshell into vinegar, as she did, is almost like an elementary school demonstration of what ocean acidification would be. But what comes out of it is almost like abstract art. It's really kind of crazy that something so literal could turn into something so abstract.
Oh, very much. She takes these eggshells, which are, you know, white and round, and in degrading them in a way, they become these really sculptural forms. And they sort of spiral out. She's also used 350 of them. So the sheer scale of that, you begin to just recognize these sort of intricate beauty in all of them, but you're also sort of blown away by how many there are. And it really captures you, like any abstract art would, but then it's so grounded in a scientific process, mm-hmm. and a scientific process that's occurring in the real world.
Go ahead. I just think that's really important. What both of you guys were pointing out in scientifically, in that she really puts you in touch with, you know, these eggs that are supposed to represent pteropods, which are a major organism in the marine food chain, and and, you know, they're food for, you know, major fish in fishing industries such as salmon. And so so she's really putting you in touch with the individual pteropod, which is very small. And here you have these individual eggs. But there's many, many eggs. And in the same way, you know, the ocean acidification might have an impact on one small organism, but there are many of them that are impacted. And so I think that's a really key scientific point, in that it really helps the viewer come to terms with the scale of these processes, that even if it's impacting a tiny organism, if that organism there's a multitude of those organisms in the ocean, and it plays a key role in the food chain, then it really does have a big impact, despite the small size of the organism.
And I think that also the quality of the eggs visually echoes that, in that it's tumultuous and sort of sharp, and it's very clear that mm-hmm. she's really considered the message that she's trying to get across.
You know, when I first saw a picture of the acidified eggs, I didn't have any caption for it. I hadn't seen the video or learned anything about what the science was that was behind it. I was really just captured visually by this whole flat full of these shapes and the very abstract beauty of it. And I wonder how much it really, you know, changed when I started to understand what the science was behind it. But I wonder how much of the science you need, or if you guys feel, how important is the science behind it to understanding and appreciating this art versus just coming and visually seeing these beautiful works of art without knowing anything about the science?
Well, I think it's an interesting question. I think it's hard to predict how any viewer is going to interpret any art. That's part of why we're interested in it, is that you have this multifaceted relationship to what you're looking at. And to have that type of interaction with science is perhaps new for people. Usually, oftentimes, they'll connect with it technically or be scared off by it because it's so technical. And this way you have multiple entry points, as Karen is a great example of.
Well, and I think we saw that in some of the collaborations as well. The artists weren't always comfortable with the idea of science. The scientists weren't always comfortable with the idea of art. And they had to kind of overcome that to get through it. And just those two very different perspectives coming to the same topic often created some really interesting, I mean, as the name of the project suggests, synergies. And one really interesting example, I thought, was Lori and Ellie, and they end up settling on actually lab notebooks as the kind of inspiring thing to create art out of.
Our initial conversations were just me trying to understand what the essence of her research is.
In lab, I keep a daily lab notebook when I'm doing work.
So I eventually asked her to show me her notebook.
And at first I thought, well, that's really just a lot of numbers, graphs.
I saw patterns of words and symbols. I thought they were just beautiful. They were really like many artist notebooks.
it's neat to be able to take something that I saw as completely mundane and turn it into something that is visually appealing, in a way like a humanization of what work I do in the lab.
One thing that is a little scary to me about this project is where I have to bounce my ideas and the resulting imagery off of Ellie and see if it jives with what her research is actually about.
I was a little anxious about it because I was like, am I supposed to critique these? But it was kind of like getting to participate in sort of the sacred act of creating art.
Whenever two worlds that might not intersect that much intersect is a great thing.
As a person who has filled lab notebooks with images similar to what I saw it being used in this process, I have to say I was amazed at the artwork that came out of it and how well it spoke to the scientific process. I mean, the finished paintings look almost like a chalkboard that's been half erased and written over a lot of times. And all I could think was, that's like what went on in my head when I was working in the lab, that I was constantly revising what I was thinking. I was constantly coming up with new ideas and overwriting the old ideas. And it was amazing to see that transformed into a whole wall of artwork.
Yes, that's what really excites us about Laurie's work, is that it really gets at the scientist as a thinker, as a creative thinker, as a passionate individual, as a human. I think a lot of what our artists are doing is kind of humanizing science, and that in a way can make it more accessible, I believe, when you realize that it's not just, you know, lots of information that maybe goes over your head, that there are people behind this, there are investigators, and, you know, they keep notebooks and it's in their own handwriting. And Laurie really was inspired by that, and I think gets at the essence of it.
Now, I wonder, you know, obviously these artists and these scientists, not always comfortable with each other's worlds, went through a really transformative process. It took them months of working together to create these pieces of art. I wonder how much of that transition you think people can get out of just viewing the art. Does it have to be a process of being involved in creating the art in order to get some of that transformation? Or can you get that that new comfort and that transformation of getting into both art and science just by visiting the exhibit?
I think you can enter into that idea in many different ways with this exhibit. And that was one of our, we have two kind of goals. One is to create meaningful experiences for the participants, and one is to create meaningful experiences for the viewer as well. And so we are really excited about the collaborative experiences that these participants have, and we wanted to share that with the viewer. And so that was one of the reasons that we asked Ari Daniel Shapiro to create those videos that are kind of a sneak peek into this collaborative process. And so I think those videos really do share that the process with the viewers. But also, I think when you view the artwork, you can see these things come to life as well. For example, when you see Janine and Liz and Sophie's work, which is basically about a phytoplankton bloom, and they made an artist's book about this bloom process. They each had a hand in that. And so in many of these pieces of artwork, you can see the hand of all the different participants in the partnership. And I think in that way, you kind of get, just walking through the gallery, you get a flavor for the different dynamics of the collaborations. And I can explain the book a little bit more.
Yeah, and that was one I was actually going to bring up next, because the lab notebook played a role there as well. Pieces or portions of the lab notebooks of the researchers ended up in that artist book of the bloom, or ended up incorporated into that. And I thought it was so interesting that not just one, but two different artists found like something that is the mundane day-to-day just record of work so aesthetically and artistically appealing.
And what's interesting about the book too is that it includes a textual component. There's a very poetic verse about the science, and the scientist is actually the one who composed that and who worked with Janine to make sure that it went integrated well with the visuals. So again, she was so present in the making of that, which was really exciting to see.
And the visuals in the book, how they're based on microscopic images, how transformed are they, or are they literally just microscopic images of the bloom?
Well, Janine was, you know, she really likes to use visual inspiration for her artwork. And so so it was really important to her to see these microscopic images of these phytoplankton. And she does etch very intricate translations of these images. And so so you can see the actual phytoplankton form in her etchings. But she also, what I thought was interesting, was layered in these colors. And it's almost like cloud-like colors that are kind of merging and swirling. And one of the interesting things about phytoplankton blooms is that it's a bloom of many tiny, tiny, tiny little phytoplankton, microscopic phytoplankton. But if you see it from the from a satellite, it actually looks like Van Gogh painted the ocean. And so with color. And because the phytoplankton, they are color. It's like trees, you know, when you see a forest, you'll see a green from the satellite. And same in the ocean, you'll see color in the ocean where the phytoplankton are blooming. So she captured those two scales. But then she also layered those, her etchings, with equations from Sophie Clayton's notebooks, or from her models, actually. Sophie models, she uses mathematical models to better understand where phytoplankton will bloom in the ocean. And so Janine has taken these images and layered them with equations, and she's layered them with almost a satellite kind of perspective, and then she's alternating them, as Lizzie said, with the prose that Liz wrote, Liz Halliday. And so I think it really is a, it's a very dynamic piece with many contributions.
And I think, as you were talking about before, can the viewer really jump between art and science, and how fluid does that relationship become? I think as you engage with this book, you're jumping between these beautiful images, these poetic images, and then this poetic language, which is clearly about science. And it, the lines begin to get very blurry about where your thoughts kind of wander, if they're more sort of artistic or scientific.
I'm talking with Whitney Bernstein and Lizzie Kripke, co-organizers of the Synergy Art Science Collaborative, whose exhibit opens later this month at the Museum of Science. We hope you'll join our conversation. Call us at 866-999-4626, email us at livinglabradio@wgbh.org, or find us on Twitter. Now, there's this one project that actually had two different artists working with the same scientist, data, John Fink's data about I believe just the actual it's sonar data, mm-hmm. correct? It's acoustic data, basically about the bottom of the ocean. And there was Natalie, is it Miebach or Miebach?
Miebach.
Who is a sculptor, and then Mark McNulty, who was creating kind of a musical composition. And it was really interesting to see how the two translations of his data, one into a very physical form and one into a more musical form. And what really seemed to appeal to both artists, they said, was the kind of the complexity and the chaos that you'd see in John's data, that it could seem almost like white noise, or could seem overwhelmingly chaotic and overwhelmingly complex. And you had to kind of spend some time with it to really find the form and the aesthetically pleasing portions of it.
That's usually how I work now. I go from raw data into a sculptural translation. And so one of the things that attracted me to John's data was the complexity of it. And so I was thinking about how bewildering his information really felt to me as an artist. So I kept thinking about amusement park rides and how they are, in a sense, meant to bewilder us and confuse us and disorient us. But at the same time, they have this sort of motion.
Natalie's sculptures are incredible. They really do look like amusement park rides. One looks like a Ferris wheel, one looks like a merry-go-round, and they are incredibly chaotic.
Oh, yes. The color is vivacious. The craftsmanship is intricate. She even weaves some things around. And I think she's really getting at this motion, this patterned motion. So you think of amusement park rides, a lot of them kind of go in circles. And that's actually generated from her delving into the data and sort of extracting her own sort of visual patterns that she can then translate, as she says, into sculpture.
Well, it's really interesting. On your website, there is a picture of the wall of Natalie's studio while she was working on this. And even just her wall was incredibly beautiful to look at, the way she had literally maps and pieces of data that she had cut and pasted and put together into interesting forms as she was kind of visualizing the process. And then the same thing, Mark McNulty, the composer who was also working with John Finke's data, again, looking at kind of how his process worked. He had strips of data and strips of paper that were annotated like music, with, you know, codas and with, you know, here's a crescendo and a decrescendo. And to just see that thought process made visual was really incredible.
I really I like how you said this thought process made visual, because, again, I think this is a piece that really gives you a window into how one thinks about science and also how one thinks about art and kind of these similarities in those processes. Because, you know, both artists and scientists are kind of looking at the world and trying, you know, when you start to observe, you see that it's so, like you said, so complex, and there's so much chaos. And yet when you observe carefully, you see the order and the patterns in, you know, in the natural world. And I think with Natalie's sculpture, you really see that. It's very exciting. It has, you know, it's these woven pieces, it reed and wood and chipboard. And she actually says data is, those are her medium as well. And she really takes those data and incorporates them into her artwork. So when you look at it first glance, it looks like a very busy, chaotic amusement park. And then when you look more carefully, you see there's so much order. You see there's the up and down motion of the Ferris wheel, and that represents the diurnal cycle of phytoplankton moving up in the daytime and then down in the nighttime. And so she's really capturing these patterns at the same time with her sculpture.
And I know I've heard Natalie talk about how she just really is blown away by how nuanced data is, how you can constantly reanalyze it and reconsider it and extract new information. And in fact, the sound artist, Mark, was not originally involved with the collaboration. And Natalie was the one that reached out to him and she said, you know, John's data is just, it's too nuanced. And I think that sound needs to be incorporated to really get at that true complexity.
Well, let's hear a clip of how Mark then rendered this acoustic data into his own composition. It sounds a little bit like a war zone to me, but it also really does feel like you're either out in space or underwater.
Yes, I think it transports you to that place.
I think that it's it definitely warrants like some further investigation. You hear this pulsing, and it becomes intense, but then and it crescendos, but then it fades away, and. You know, the further investigation is really for, and we share this in the gallery, is for the viewer to then, you know, okay, what are these sonar data? What does it mean? I mean, we've been talking about sonar data, but you know, what the data are is that from the boat or from a robot, the scientist will send out a pulse of sound, and it'll travel through the ocean, and it'll bounce off the bodies of these tiny plankton. And when it bounces off, it echoes back to the instrument, and the instrument can hear different echoes that are basically signatures for the kind of plankton that are out there. And so by listening to the echoes that come back, they can then understand, okay, there's this kind of krill or there's this kind of plankton out there, and get a general picture of what's there, and also see, oh, there's a big swarm of them coming, and then they're going away. And I think that's what he's capturing in his sound piece, is that you hear this plankton swarm coming, and then it fades away.
And he puts it in context. I think you really feel like there are things drifting underwater through the ocean. Again, he really puts you in that place. There's another pair, artist-scientist pair, Jill McDermott and Brian McFarlane, who I think really also take you to that context of science. Jill is the scientist, and she travels to the very, very, very bottom of the ocean studying hydrothermal vents. And Brian does these large-scale oil paintings that are just dark and dynamic and mysterious. And Jill has talked to him about when she's in the submarine, she shuts off all the lights, just how encompassing that darkness is. And I think Brian's painting sort of language that he's developed really gets at that experience. So you're not just connecting with scientific information, but you're connecting with the bigger picture of where does the science actually take place? What frontiers are we exploring?
Well, one of the things I thought was really interesting about Brian and Jill's collaboration is that Jill actually is a bit of a painter herself and says that she thinks drawing may be actually the thing in the world that she's best at, but that she ended up choosing science. So it was interesting to see how someone with an interest in art interacted in this process. And the same was true actually in one of the other collaborative pairs, Anastasia and Larry. Larry is a physical oceanographer, but he also does some very interesting photography on the side. And so their collaboration actually had two parts to it, where Anastasia, as a weaver and a jeweler, was creating sculpture pieces. And then they actually moved into Larry's medium. And it's interesting to hear in their own words what it was that was appealing to each of them about the different media. So let's hear Larry said that for him, it was just the sheer beauty and also the chaos in Anastasia's work that really appealed to him.
Larry is also an artist, and we have been collaborating on light motion photography. Dancing with light is definitely a new art form for me.
It's safe to say that Anastasia, she has the light, and she's spinning that light and creating these shapes with an amazing amount of control. And I just take the picture.
It was really exciting to capture a moment in time. And the ocean eddies that this art is representing is something that's alive, just in motion. And so to actually use photography and use dance and use light to capture the essence of that is an incredible translation.
So that was actually talking about Larry's medium, which is this motion photography where they really got at the motion of the oceans and how the ocean moves. So obviously some very interesting stuff to see. This exhibit is opening in 2 weeks, I believe, right? You guys are installing this week?
Yes, we are.
Very exciting. Whitney Bernstein and Lizzie Kripke are co-organizers of the Synergy Art Science Collaborative, whose exhibit opens at the Museum of Science in Boston later this month. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to Ari Daniel Shapiro for sharing his audio of these synergy pairs. And thanks all for listening. This is Living Lab on The Point. I'm Heather Goldstone.
The Point airs weekdays at 9:30 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. We're also on Facebook at The Point, WCAI. Amy Vince produces The Point. Mindy Todd is executive producer. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.